The King in the North.
Skull Vikings, Nordy Sportscast.
Listening to the Northeast Podcast. I'm Eric. I'm here with Ryan and Jim. How's it going, guys?
Very well.
I feel good. How are you?
I feel great. I was at the Vikings game. I watched them in person seal up their second NFC North title in the last 3 years.
Well done.
And well done. It's been a fun year. It was kind of a bad game. I'm not complaining.
Like a boring game.
Yeah, I don't want to sound like I'm complaining about the Vikings. They were amazing. They won 34-7, and they pulled all their starters in the fourth quarter. So I mean, they obviously were incredible. But the Bengals were not there to put up a fight.
They kind of gave up after the pick six. It looked like.
Oh, I thought you were going to say they kind of gave up halfway through the game against the Bears last week.
That's possible.
Yeah, I think that's more of the case. Yeah, no, it was terrible. Their coach actually announced he isn't coming back.
Dude, how funny is that? We beat him so bad that he quit.
Well, he did. He said that before the game. He said it this morning. I think he said it because he was in town with his best buddy, Mike Zimmer. And
they're buddies?
Zimmer came up under him. He was the D coordinator for the Bengals before he was with the Vikings. So, yeah, he's real close with Marvin Lewis, and he actually, I believe, is going to offer Marvin Lewis to be the assistant head coach after this season.
You think?
Would be my guess. Yeah, definitely. So, guys, we have a special beer in front of us. What are we drinking?
Jimbo, this is you.
Dude, this is bringing it back to the original, man. This is Fair States beer. They do this release once a year. It's very, very exciting. It is in my top five favorite beers of all time, which I do not rank the top five. I just say they're in the top five. So it's tied with my favorite, okay? It's raspberry Roselle. It's their standard Roselle, and then they re-ferment it with like a shit ton of actual raspberries, and it just tastes like a fucking juice bomb heaven in a glass. So raspberry-y.
Yeah, it's really good.
I think my kids would like this. How good it is.
Well, like if you'd have told, I think any one of us, we all love craft beer, right? I mean, that's not a surprise. If you'd have told any of us like even 3-4 years ago, like in your top five beers, future Jim, one of them is going to be a raspberry sour. You probably would have been like, oh, come on.
I would have punched myself in the face.
Like,
but
listen, future Jim, I don't want to hear about a raspberry beer that's going to be in my top five. That's preposterous.
I would have said it would have been in the top five right next to the Mike's Hard Limeade.
Right, exactly. That sort of would have been my reaction. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely beer first. It's just really, really fruity with like not like a too sweet. It's like a dry finish, isn't it?
I would definitely consider it like a if you want to, not a champagne dry, but like maybe a dry white wine sort of finish to it. But yeah, really good. Not in the sense of where you get that like bitter acetone taste. It's really delicious. Really delicious.
So Fair State is slinging these things in 4-pack 12-ounce cans, and it's around. You know, I think they try to make as much as they can. I know they need a shit ton of actual raspberries to do it. So the batches are always sort of small, but available. So if you're in Minneapolis, you should absolutely find some. Even if you're not, find a liquor store that has this stuff. You know, Central Liquors, the one over or off, St. Anthony Liquors probably does. Come in and find some. It's worth it. It's a limited release. You need it in your life.
Any place that carries Fair State will probably have this.
Yeah, or stop by the tap room, of course.
Yeah, no, I actually stopped by the tap room and tried the beers we're trying today just last week. And I have to say, they had so many beers on tap, and that had been kind of my one complaint, is that I felt like they had gotten away from that for a little while, and they had so many fun, exciting.
They had like the U-Pick and their,
it was,
I don't
it was
know, they
the,
a bunch.
The list was huge, mm-hmm. and it was really, really impressive. And obviously, their new facility in St. Paul is paying dividends because
I bet we're starting to see that
you
actually
are
flow in now.
I think you are, and it was so impressive for such a small place how many beers that they had on tap and how many just like really funky fun beers that they had. So if you're feeling adventurous, I know we've told you this 1,000 times, but get out, go to Fair State, go there for the holidays, get yourself a couple beers, try some sours, and introduce yourself to some beers that you may never have tried or thought you'd like.
And what is a more Christmas beer than this deep red?
Deep, dark, you know, claret red. It's beautiful.
It's wonderful.
I love this beer. I'm so excited to be drinking it. On our next podcast, we get to do the double, which this is the first year making the double. And if you like this, why not add more booze? Yeah. I'm really excited for it. I don't know if it's going to be better than this. I can't imagine it could be, but it's going to be fun to try.
I was going to give you guys my take on this beer, but you guys took all the cool terms I was going to say.
You're not great with describing the beer. You just usually go, I like it.
Well, all right, that's fine.
I was going to say all of these things that you said.
Next one is going straight to you, buddy.
From the finish to all those beer terms you guys were using.
It's not that fun to listen to people talk about beer. You just want to drink it.
I was going to say all of those things, but you took them all first. So I'm just going to say it's delicious and get yourself to fair state.
I was copying off your notes when I used acetone.
Yeah.
So Eric did have that written down, to be fair.
Right, yeah.
All right, guys. Before we get into our sports talk, our sports cast for today, please give us a follow on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Northeast Podcast. Also, subscribe on iTunes. And if you're a Podbean person, maybe you are, go to Podbean. If you have some cool ideas of where you'd like to listen to your podcasts and you'd like us to get on there, let us know. And we'll try to do that as well, because we want to make it as easy for you to listen to your favorite show so you don't have to switch to your second, third, fourth, and sometimes listen to shows.
Yeah, that's fair. I think the only place we're not on is Google Play Store, and I've never heard anybody say we should be. But if you're like, I only get my pods from Google Play, man. Let us know.
I think Spotify is the next one we really have to work on.
Yeah, they're doing pods now. You know what's crazy is iTunes. I mean, we're already all over iTunes. We're very well established there. It's probably the easiest place to find it.
Yeah.
But they're doing a ton of new stuff with podcasts, trying to get people to have exclusive podcasts through there. So who knows what the future holds?
Yeah. Who knows?
Who knows?
All right, guys. It's time to jump into our sports cast. And we will do a lot of talk on the new NFC North champions, Minnesota Vikings, moving to 11-3 on the season. But there's a place I wanted to go first in our starting lineup. So this week's the starting lineup is going to be about a problem we've had recently in the NFL, a string of problems, in my opinion. And one of them hurt the Vikings last week. And then in the game of the year today, the Pittsburgh Steelers and the New England Patriots came down to a controversial call about what is and what isn't a catch in the NFL. And so my question to you guys is the catch rule in the NFL deterring from the play on the field? And do you have an idea of how it can be fixed?
Question one, yes, it is. And the problem lies in that nobody, including the referees, week to week, has a consistent view or interpretation of what is and isn't a catch. And I think when you have the former, like they have the former officials in the booth doing the replay reviews, and they're all like, yeah, that actually looked like a catch to me. Mm-hmm. His hand was still under it, referring to the Jesse James touchdown that wasn't in the Pittsburgh-New England game today. And then the referee comes out with some random term that he said the catch did not survive the ground.
Shut
or something.
The fuck up.
Like he comes up with some brand new phrasing that nobody had ever heard of before. It makes it think like you're just taking a randomly ambiguous point of view when you're looking at this
and deciding the outcome of the really maybe the biggest game in the NFL this year so far
and potentially the playoffs. Yeah. And there's a lot more ramifications to it than that. And I don't know if there's a way to fix it other than scrapping the entire thing and starting over. Because like in the example of today, Jesse James caught it. He secured it. He turned around. His knee hit the ground. He was falling into the end zone. So technically, if he's a runner at that point, as soon as the ball crosses the plane, mm-hmm. it's a touchdown, and no matter what happens after that, it's over.
If you're a running back, you run in and throw the ball in the fucking air. You're in. It's over. The touchdown becomes a touchdown, and the play is dead.
Right. But in this case, because he was, quote-unquote, going to the ground, which is the rule, and to be fair, I will also say that the referees, given the nature of the rule and what it says, I think interpreted correctly today. I just don't think the rule is very good. So I think they need to say that all of the catch rule language that we have currently for this scenario of going to the ground is going to be thrown in the garbage. We're going to get the competition committee together. We're going to get all the owners together, minus Jerry Richardson. And then we're going to talk about...
You didn't have to explain that
one. Yeah.
Nice.
And then we're going to talk about what this actually means moving forward, because this cannot continue to go on. And the NFL does not like black eyes, right? And this is kind of a big black eye.
Wow. I thought you were taking a really bad political stance there.
Black eye.
Sorry.
Eye.
Yeah. Doesn't like black eyes to mar okay. the game.
You don't need to keep repeating
it. Does it keep sounding bad? I don't mean it to sound that way.
It's just I'm on the edge of my seat every time.
I was thinking Kaepernick right
away. Yeah. I was like, okay. Yeah, they're having that problem too.
All right. Well,
look.
Now I'm thrown off completely. Like I said something wrong. But.
They don't like it. They don't
you're
like
fine.
It.
But yeah, they don't like being embarrassed, and they don't like looking bad, and that's what you're referring to. And yeah, I mean, it sucks, and there's obviously going to be two fan bases in every game, and half of them are always going to disagree with shit, but this is wider than that.
Well, I think if this was like once a year, I don't know if it would be that big of a deal, but it keeps seeming to pop up week to week to week, where nobody understands why that's not a catch. Other teams that where the call goes in their favor are like, yeah, okay, wasn't a catch, I guess. Mm-hmm. But if it happened to them, they'd be furious.
Yeah, and I think of that Thielen catch that you referred to, where it was, we didn't get a touchdown that drive. It's not like we threw one to Kyle Rudolph the next play. I think we settled for a 3-point there.
He bobbled the ball.
And
it never touched the ground, but he had control of the ball the entire time. He briefly
shifted it on his chest,
and then he grabbed the ball again. I don't think in the current way that we're looking at the rules.
He was already out of bounds three times. Like his foot, knee, and butt had already hit out of bounds at that point.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter though.
I mean, I just don't get it.
And
like
I think that how the rule is interpreted, you know, that same play with, Thielen, it had to be called the way it was. But having said that, I think it's a problem where most people, like the neutral fan, is really annoyed with these. And it's like, even the announcers today, they spent 2 minutes saying, yep, that's a touchdown, yep, that's a touchdown, yep, that's a touchdown. And they're like, why are they still looking at this? This is an easy one. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, oh, maybe they're looking to see if the ball moved. And then they're like, oh, the ball did move. It took them like 3 minutes of looking at the replay over and over and over to even see this. And so to me, it was like, when are you a runner or not? For a couple years, they tried to make it, you're a runner if you take 2 steps. Then it was like, you're a runner if you make a football
move. Football move.
Isn't catching the ball, turning around, and leaning for the goal line a football move? You know. So I just think that common sense is losing out here. And whenever,
for sure. Whenever they're over-judiciarying the rule to the point where it's actually crippling the referees to make something, like you said, that seems like a common sense call turn into
it's like
completely
if
the other
it looks like a catch and it smells like a catch, it's a catch, and let's move on.
It all started with, was it Dez Bryant?
I think it was Dez Bryant in that playoff game.
And there was one with Calvin Johnson, too, where he...
Against the Bears.
Yeah, where he caught it with one hand, and then he like put it onto the ground, and as he hit the ground with it in the end zone, it fell out of his hand.
But he had taken like 3 steps,
mm-hmm.
and, but he never actually went to the ground.
Oh, yeah.
And then the ball, like, he sort of took 3 steps and then kind of stumbled and then, like, put the ball on the ground and then it came out of his hand and then they said it was incomplete.
Yeah. Crazy.
Preposterous. And if you think about the current rule, Adam Thielen running full speed through the end zone, catches a ball, 2 steps, but he's sort of falling down, could take 3 or 4 more steps out of the end zone, hit a wall in the back of the end zone, and the ball pops out, that's an incomplete catch.
Right.
Which is
ridiculous. He hasn't gone to the ground, right? That's the thing.
If he's in the process of going to the ground, which is stupid, it's a dumb rule.
Yeah. So I think there you have some soul searching to do, because it's never good in a sport when the fans watching a game, like the neutral fan, disagrees with so many of the calls, especially at critical moments of the game, especially with ones that could decide the rest of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just really, really key moments are being decided with a rule that nobody really agrees with and no one really understands.
And then the NFL could come out and say, yeah, he got that wrong.
Yeah.
But we're not going to change anything.
Yeah, there won't be any punishment for it, and he got it wrong.
And he'll be doing the Super Bowl, don't worry.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, guys, it's time to move on to the main event. And the main event has to be the Minnesota Vikings, your NFC North champions.
Champs!
Dude,
the Kings,
come on, man.
Of the North, the Minnesota Vikings.
Who would have thought this season was going to go like this?
I don't think anybody.
No.
I don't think that the Vikings thought this year.
No national analyst picked this. I mean, it's so exciting.
Well, then ask everybody again after Bradford and Dalvin Cook go out for the season.
Yeah.
Definitely wouldn't have said, oh, yeah, we'll win the North. We'll have 12 wins this season. No big deal.
Crazy.
Pretty unbelievable.
13 already.
Yeah. No, 12.
What?
Or
no, we're 11-3.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I'm assuming we're going to beat the Bears at the very least.
Okay, I got you. I got you. That would be if we won out.
Yeah, and I think we should, because the other big news of the day was the return of Aaron Rodgers, who threw 3 interceptions and the Packers had 4 turnovers in all but being eliminated from the playoffs. All it will take is a win tomorrow with the currently in playoff Atlanta Falcons over the just hapless, crappy Tampa Bay Bucks to officially knock the Packers out of the playoffs.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, this whole thing of Rodgers, he's coming back, and you know he's going to save their season. He's the white knight riding in. No, he couldn't do it. Carolina's too good. They didn't play well. That's it.
Yeah, he's definitely
the
rusty.
Dreams are crushed. I love that.
Yeah, and Carolina's a decent team. I mean, we saw that.
Yeah.
They've got some spunk, especially offensively, and you can't let Cam Newton
do what he did.
Get going, otherwise that's going to happen. They... Of course, because Rodgers is on the team, they recovered the onside kick late and had a chance. Who cares?
Mm-hmm.
We're not worried about them. We're focused on us. We're going to beat them next week.
No, I'm
not
worried about it. I was excited that they're pretty much officially done.
If Atlanta wins, Rodgers does not play against us, right?
I think he probably will.
I hope he does.
If they've shown that he's back and he's healthy.
But don't you think they're going to look at it and say, we're eliminated from the playoffs. We have zero reason to play Aaron Rodgers right now. We have all the reason to play Brett Hundley
right now. You're acting like people in Wisconsin are smart. Are you kidding me? No, they're going to be like, the Vikings, we need revenge. And then we'll break his collarbone again.
Wow. It's really brutal.
I hope we don't. I don't want to see people get injured, but I wouldn't want to play the Minnesota Vikings defense right now.
Oh, my God.
I just wouldn't. I wouldn't want to play them. And so I think if they were smart, they would keep Rodgers out. He's the best player in the NFL, and he's not fully healed. He has no business being on the field in a meaningless game against division rivals. One of the 2 best defenses in the league. He has no reason to go out there.
I think because of the injury, his pride is not going to let him sit out. I don't care if Ted Thompson, Mike McCarthy sit him down and say, man, we really don't think you should play. And he'll say, I don't care. Yeah. I want to get revenge. I want to throw up 5 touchdowns against the Vikings. I don't care. It's a home game. It's going to be cold. You know, that whole spiel. He's not gonna want to sit out, but I think smart money is that he does.
I think he'll play.
I wouldn't bet against it. Yeah. Like, if you handed me $100 and said, which way are you going to bet? I would bet on him
that he'll play. Yeah, that's what I think. That's what I'm going with.
All right, guys. So let's take a quick look at the NFL playoff picture. We'll just quickly run through the AFC.
Every team and their chances currently.
Let's just go with the NFC for right now.
Well, it's important when you have Super Bowl aspirations to look at who you might have to
run. I agree, and just for me personally, I want to know, because I haven't looked at the shit.
Just quickly with the AFC, the number 1 seed is the Patriots, who escape the number 2 seed, Pittsburgh Steelers, today. Still the top 2 seeds. One spot behind is the Jacksonville Jaguars,
who are kind of sneaky good right now.
I know.
And I think they're a lot like the Vikings in the AFC, in that their defense is playing at such a high level right now, nobody wants to see them.
No
and
one.
Bortles was almost benched going into this season for Chad Henne, and now he's figured it out.
He had a great game today, apparently.
He's figured it out.
His numbers look good.
And they're playing pretty well. I don't think anybody wants to play them right now.
And that is really the end of the good teams in the AFC. The number 4 seed is the Kansas City Chiefs, who are 3-6 in their last 9 games, coming off a pretty impressive win the other night, but still not a great team. Number 5 seed is a horrible, horrible Tennessee Titans team. That's 8-6, who just lost to the San Francisco 49ers. They're absolutely an awful team. They have to play the Rams and the Jaguars the rest of the way. They're not making
the
playoffs.
No, they beat the Niners today.
Yeah.
Niners kicked the field goal
in the last second
of the game and won it.
Oh, they did? They ended up winning it?
Yes.
Oh, I saw the suck-up field goal and I thought it was done. They lost?
Dude, yes, wow. I know.
Okay, don't ever turn off an NFL game.
And
apparently.
The number 6 seed is the Buffalo Bills, who are 8-6. They just, at this point, it's got to seem pretty stupid that they played Nathan Peterman for a game in the middle of a playoff race, pretty much just intentionally losing a game when they're fighting for a playoff spot. On the outside looking in, you have the Ravens, the Chargers, and the Raiders.
Who do you think is most likely to get in there?
I think the Chargers are probably most likely, but I don't know. They're three teams.
I think the Ravens are playing the best out of really all of them, but I don't know what schedules look like. So
In the NFC, you still have the number one seed and clinching a first round bye, the Philadelphia Eagles. They're 11-2. They're a game ahead of the Vikings. They don't have their quarterback, and they narrowly defeated the just terrible New York Football Giants.
Just a hapless team.
Just a terrible team.
That put like an offensive show on against that Eagles defense.
Mm-hmm.
The Eagles have went from maybe the scariest team in the league to a team that I don't think a lot of people fear.
Love to see Nick Foles, even at home.
He played pretty well, though.
I'd play against Nick Foles
anyway. Threw four touchdown passes today.
Yeah, he also threw for like 180 yards.
I would say it was less than 200 yards.
No, I think it was like 250 or something.
They play against the Oakland Raiders at home next week. And then the final week they play against the Dallas Cowboys, who will probably be fighting for their playoff lives. So they have to, win out to guarantee getting home field through the playoffs, but really just winning one of the games probably gives them a decent chance. They already secured one of the top two seeds in the NFC. The two seed, your Minnesota Vikings, NFC North champions. They're 10-3, one of the best teams in the league, tied for the second best record. We have to go to Green Bay and home on New Year's Eve against the Chicago Bears. Should win both those games.
Mm-hmm.
Three seed, I almost said St. Louis, the LA Rams, who absolutely obliterated Seahawks.
That was embarrassing for Seahawks.
Seahawks at home lost 42-7.
Damn.
To the Rams.
I thought we beat this fucking Cincinnati today. Holy cow.
No, and it was over about midway through the second quarter.
it was a horrible
beating. Todd Gurley had four touchdowns in the first half. RIP anybody in fantasy that had to play him.
Yeah. Oh, I have him. I'm just not in the playoffs.
Yeah, so the Rams are your three seed at 10-4 right now. The four seed is the New Orleans Saints, who played a pretty tight game at home against the Jets today. Didn't look great. The number five seed is the red-hot Carolina Panthers, also at 10-4. They have to play Tampa and Atlanta. And then the sixth seed at 8-5 is the Atlanta Falcons. They could win tomorrow night against the Bucks. They probably should, and they'd be one game out of third, fourth, and fifth place teams. And then on the outside looking in, at 7, the Lions at 8, the Seahawks at 9, the Cowboys, and at 10, the Green Bay Packers, who technically still have a chance, but pretty much had to kiss their playoff hopes goodbye today.
Going into the season, you look at who's at, what are they, 8, 9, and 10? If you just said Seattle, Dallas, and Green Bay at 8, 9, and 10, you would have been like off your rocker going into the season. Like, no, Dak Prescott, these teams are primed, they're ready to go. Packers are going to probably dominate the North, especially after the Sam Bradford injury and then the Dalvin Cook injury. You thought, well, it's easy pickings from here on out. So, anyway.
And it's crazy. I mean, it turns out that even with Rodgers in, we've won so many games, we may still have won the North. It's not like it's like they gave it to us by Rodgers going out. We've just won almost every fucking game.
Yeah. No, for the rest of my life, I'm going to have to laugh at my take. I think it was on the show. Might have just been to some friends. I said that after Cook got hurt that the season was over.
You did not.
I did.
You didn't do that on the show.
I said the season is over. They are now 11-3 and are in prime position to make a run to maybe even the Super Bowl.
So if we win our last two games, which I predict we will, I think we will win both games, and Philly splits, wouldn't we get home field throughout?
I think
we get the tiebreaker with them.
We didn't play them.
No, I know, but like division, the other ones.
The NFC wins.
Because we were tied earlier and they were giving us number one.
But those things that are like division record and strength of schedule, and so those are changing on a weekly basis.
So we might not.
We might not. I would assume that if we won out and they lost to the Cowboys, that we'd have a better chance because that would make another NFC loss for them.
Okay.
But, and a division loss.
Yeah, but I'm not sure. I don't know exactly how it has to go. All I know is that they are not the team that they were, and I have no fear of them.
Eric, anymore. If only there was like a podcast that would like find this shit out and like tell us, you know, the different scenarios.
I don't know.
We'll come back next week for that. Yeah.
I'll have to do some researching on that one. But no, definitely we'll have to see what happens. I think the Vikings should take care of business, and home field looks like a pretty good place, especially with how well we've played in U.S. Bank Stadium.
And if we were ever primed for the proverbial, like, cool talking point of a trap game. I would say going into the game today, you could have really thought this might be, this could be ugly. Andy mm-hmm. Dalton's back. You know, maybe they're trying to, you know, win one for the coach. And then after about nine plays, I think that all those fears went away.
Well, we scored on our opening drive. I think there was a pick six shortly after.
Yeah.
It
and then they went for it quickly. And didn't get it. And yep. then we got the ball again. And I was like, okay, I have no
they
fear.
They suck, we're good. Okay. Yeah. It's so nice to see a team that's supposed to be good win against bad teams, unlike the Timberwolves.
Take care of business, and you're not looking ahead to the next week and saying, oh, we got this big matchup against the Packers. They win today. All of a sudden, it's a completely different story. We came out. We took care. Again, Case Keenum, with the unsexiest quarterback play ever, was 22 of 25. Played a great game. Yeah. Couple touchdowns.
Daggered one into Diggs. That was a tough pass.
The Diggs touchdown, the Rudolph, you know, underneath that they
that
loved to run that.
That was nice.
But that was nice and easy. But again, very efficient, very unflattering. Yeah. Right? And that's perfect.
Yeah, I thought that Keenum played one of his worst games of the year today.
So you look at the stats and you're like, he actually played a pretty good game.
And it's every week with him. It's actually crazy. He, like, it seems like he's missing open people. He's making bad decisions. He's throwing passes that aren't very good. And that, his final stat line, 20 of 23 for 236, two touchdowns, no picks. I mean, that's a great, great performance.
You take
by
that
quarterback.
Every week.
You take that every week forever, and you'd probably win almost every
he
game.
He got sacked a few times today. They were getting to him a little bit, but
and we have a
not
little,
horrible.
It's kind of a patchwork line a little bit at this point. Remmers was a little rusty, I think. Remmers was a little rusty for having been off for...
Don't.
What,
rip on Remmers.
5 weeks or so. No, I mean, he was, yeah. Eric slams his phone down.
Fuck that!
God damn it, Barter. Elfline coming back, immediate difference maker. You could see it in the run game, too. I mean, just holes were opening up left and right.
In the screen game.
I don't know what our average run was, but it seemed like it was 8 yards, dude. We were just every single time finding that, getting through the first
Jet
first
out of
line.
The backfield, catching balls like crazy, and Latavius was just ramming it down their throat. It was great.
Did you guys hear the passing stat? So... Jerick McKinnon had over 100 yards receiving today, which is the first time a Minnesota Vikings running back has done that since 2004. Do you know which running back that was?
Robert Smith?
No.
Don't look at me. I
2004. Ooh, boy.
04. Graduated high school. Great year.
Ontario Smith.
Yes.
Oh, Barter.
Ontario Smith.
Nice work. The Wizinator.
No, did he... Did he use a fake dick for a pee test?
Yes. No, they caught. I think they found it when he was trying to get on the airplane.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, you just can't. Like,
TSA
you can't even
security.
Have that.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's just wearing a fake dick. Yeah. He
Maybe
did that.
He's into that.
He did that. That's
really odd. The Wizinator himself.
Shockingly, he's been out of the league pretty much ever since then.
All right. So here's a great question for you guys. Real. This is quality sports talk here.
Okay.
All right. Who has a worse? About. Who has a worse reputation? For what they did, Fred Smoot or Ontario Smith?
So give me the Smoot story.
He's the Love Boat.
Oh, he's Mr. Love Boat?
Yeah, he's like the main dude behind
the
Love Boat.
Well, I've definitely heard of the Love Boat, and I don't think I've heard of the Wizinator, so I gotta go with the Smootster.
Yeah, Smoot was like out in the open sex acts and... Yeah, like harassment charges and like pretty much soiled the name of the Vikings for quite some time.
Well, Ontario him Smith and like five other people. He wasn't the only one
McKinney.
But he also has one of the greatest / dumbest quotes in the history of the National Football League, which was, what was it, 73% of the earth is covered in water. The rest is covered by Smoot.
That's pretty good.
Because he's a DB. So
I get it. I love it.
That was him?
I think that was him.
That's a great quote. I'm sorry. I'm into that quote.
I'm really into it.
I think that was
him. I mean,
him.
That's up there with Randy to write checks level quotes. That's good.
All right, guys. So just so you know, the playoff picture right now would have the Patriots and the Steelers getting byes with the Jaguars hosting a playoff game against the Bills.
They would destroy them.
The other game would be the Chiefs.
Also known as the game that nobody gives a fuck about outside of those two cities.
The Chiefs would be hosting the Titans.
There you go.
The Titans are bad, so the Chiefs would probably win.
So Andy Reid will find a way to blow it in the last 30 seconds? Yeah.
No, he'll do that against the Patriots.
So it'll actually be against a good team. They'll look really like world beaters against the Titans.
Until the fourth quarter.
They'll be beating the Patriots.
Play really well for three quarters against the Patriots, and then he'll blow a 22-point lead.
Call a timeout he doesn't have or something. Yeah. And then in the NFC, you currently have the 3-seed Rams hosting the 6-seed Falcons and the 4-seed Saints hosting the 5-seed Panthers.
Okay.
Those are two good games.
I would say one team you don't want to have. I like that the Panthers and the Saints would be playing one another.
Yeah.
Because I think those are two teams that would match up pretty well against us, and so to eliminate one of them would be good. I think one team you don't want to have, like, let them get some early success in the playoffs and look really good is the Rams. They're young, inexperienced, they don't know much about the playoffs, and so they might get a little timid, a little gun-shy, a little conservative, young coach. Either that or he's just going to go, like, guns blazing and not care.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we want them to come into US Bank Stadium, let's say it would be for the NFC Championship, with, you know, 2 30-point victories under their belt. I know we beat them at home, I know, but that would be a scary team in my opinion.
See, I'm hoping for the Rams.
We beat them very handily.
I know.
Because I think of the teams that are currently in, if you had to rank the quarterbacks, I mean, it's like Drew Brees, Cam Newton, Matt Ryan, and then you have on the
Jared
other side,
Goff,
Jared Goff, Case Keenum, and Nick Foles. If we could get to the Super Bowl by beating Jared Goff and Nick Foles,
okay with it?
That is a dream scenario.
I mean, with Case Keenum,
how ridiculous
is that?
That's a dream scenario to have to face those two quarterbacks. And honestly, quarterback play in the playoffs is so critical. So defense and quarterbacks, I know we have the defense, and I'd love to play some of those guys who just aren't ready to play. Someone who can put the pressure on, like the Minnesota Vikings.
Well, shout out to the defense today, too. Man, smothering.
Yeah.
It was embarrassing for Cincinnati, but also a really good bounce back, remember what we're all about, defensive performance, which was just smash mouth all over the place. Their receivers weren't open almost any part of the day. If they were, they were tackled almost immediately. You know, A.J. Green's a big yards after catch guy. No deep balls, nothing. I think he had a couple catches, innocuous.
What, 60 yards, maybe?
All irrelevant. LaFell couldn't get open to save his life. Again, handful of catches, but nothing big.
Okay.
The defense looked phenomenal, putting pressure on the QB all day long. Everyone was in position. Everyone looked great.
Your boy Hunter, Eric, had a nice game.
He was good.
If it hadn't been for Teddy Bridgewater blowing it, we would have had the shutout.
So should we talk about the return of Teddy?
Let's talk about it.
It was a nice moment. Eric, you were there. What was it like, man?
The crowd was so excited about it.
So you felt warm deep down in your heart?
For sure. And honestly, I mean, the place was kind of given that everyone knew Teddy would make it into this game.
I was hoping.
And so, you know, the crowd was kind of giving little Teddy chance. But once you could see that he was definitely coming in,
he put his helmet on, yeah.
It was pretty electric. And it was just a great moment. And honestly, it's like I heard someone saying that they didn't want Teddy to come in because they didn't want there to be a controversy or they didn't want there to be whatever. They didn't want people talking about it. And I was like, if you can't get excited about the guy who was our quarterback, who had a horrifying
catastrophic injury
that almost ended his ability to walk.
Almost ended his life.
He might have lost his leg.
Yeah.
That was the story.
In the 1800s, he would have had his leg amputated.
Oh, right. For sure.
In like 1920, he would have. I mean, there's no way that they're saving this dude's leg but without modern medicine. And so, to me, it was like, if you can't get excited about a guy coming back from something like that, then you don't really like sports. And it's like, you know, we all want our team to win, but really and truly, we just want to have fun, special, exciting moments. And this was definitely one of them. And it was just like really cool to see the crowd, the players, everybody going nuts for Teddy to make his return to the field.
You didn't see it on the broadcast, but they did show Keenum went over and set his helmet down, put his hat on, and then went up and gave Teddy a big, you know, pat on the butt, you know, like, go get him, kid, kind of situation. So he was fully behind it.
Oh, yeah. If he knows he's going to start next week. I mean, there's
fine.
No doubt.
He wouldn't even consider doing that if he thought that there was going to be any sort of controversy. And then Teddy put that to rest pretty quickly by throwing a pick on his first pass.
And he was 0-for-2 with a pick. But, I mean, he did have a nice second pass.
A knock on Teddy at all because he, you know, he's nervous. He's rusty. He hasn't played football for over a year, year and a half now. So it was, get him back into the game. He shook the rust off a little bit. He got under center, took some snaps, That's all you really want.
Fall apart.
No, yeah, it's all you really want.
And honestly, I think that that moment was too big for almost any human being on earth.
It's more about the player. It's not about the game. It's not about the team. It was more about look at the hill, this mountain, the mountain that this guy had to climb just to even get to this point mm-hmm. in time.
Yeah, and honestly, it's like, of course he put a little too much on that pass. Like, if you didn't think that the emotions and adrenaline were just flowing
through his BP,
his body,
his heart rate was at 220.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, of course he threw it a little too hard. I mean, I would have probably thrown that thing like a bullet directly in front of my own feet. I mean, he just, it was such a big moment for the guy, and it was electric in there. And, you know, I don't think the judgment should be that Teddy is now a bad player because he had
a bad pass. Off two passes, he's awful. Yeah. No, I'm kidding. And actually, he did show some composure because he could have thrown the ball on the first read, you know, just taking the safe play. He could have thrown it to his second read like right away, but he kind of held on to it. He stayed patient, and then he got a little happy feet, which you're bound to do when, like you said, emotions are just at their all-time peak, especially for him. He sailed it just a hair. It wasn't even that bad of a pass. If McKinnon doesn't tip it, it's not even it just falls dead. So
it was
fine. He got in the game. If we need him in the playoffs, I have the utmost confidence in Teddy.
Yeah.
He will come in and do a very good job.
I agree. All right, so the final thing today at the buzzer, overtime, we're going to start with the Minnesota Twins and some of their free agent moves or non-moves. Let's start with you, Barter. Where are you at with the Twins and what they've done thus far?
Well, I'm cool with the Ohtani money.
Those are some really fun moves they made.
I'm glad that ability for teams has opened up. Number one, that Ohtani said, I'm not going to Minnesota. So then the Twins immediately knew, well, we can trade some of this money to one of the teams, you know, and one of them ended up getting them, that we gave $1 million of international signing money to get, I think we got a fifth round. Their current, from this last draft, their fifth round pick.
It was their third round.
Their third round. Okay, so we got the fifth rounder from Seattle then. Yep. Okay, sorry, I mixed those two up. So that, I think, gives us eight players through the first five rounds of last year's draft based on those two trades with Seattle and the Los Angeles, California Angels of Anaheim, Silver Dollar City, California. So I think it's a cool move that we won't see any dividends out of for 5 years, potentially.
Right.
Who knows? But still stockpiling young talent, regardless.
It's kind of a savvy move. It's a savvy money move. It's
exactly.
Moneyball.
It's free money. They're giving monopoly money to a team that knew they might not even use this and giving up a draft pick, a high draft pick to us. I mean, a third round pick in major league drafts is, because the talent pool is so large, considering the international pool, it's actually a pretty high draft pick considering the amount of players available. So I like the fact that they're thinking creatively. I'm not saying that Terry Ryan wouldn't have made this move or wouldn't have considered it, but it's nice to see them trying different avenues to sign young players and restock the farm system, because right now we got a lot of the cavalry coming up, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we've got a bunch of those guys already in the majors and playing, and the handful of guys that we have may or may not make the squad. I don't know if any of them are really top major league talent. We may have a few guys that might come up this season. I'm not really sure. But anyway, reloading the farm system with top talent is always going to be profitable. And even if you look at the Cubs, half the guys that they had in their stocked farm system didn't play on the World Series team because they traded them away to get other assets, like Aroldis Chapman and things like that. So it's always good to have, because you look at the minor leaguers and a lot of times their value is just so overinflated that even if they trade them based on like a single A season where they were mashing the ball and then they never amounted to anything, you can use that value to your advantage.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully the Twins are going to do that.
Do you think, how excited are you for the upcoming Twin season? I mean, I know it's still a ways away, but you love baseball.
I'm very excited.
You're very excited. Do you think that the Twins will make the playoffs?
No.
What?
Not currently with the roster that we have.
Interesting.
I think we are still a couple, at least one lefty bullpen arm away, and probably another major pitching signing.
Okay. So you're really looking at this offseason, like, what can we garner? What can we get?
I think the White Sox are going to be pretty loaded, and the Indians are what they are. They're still a very good club, so I think we're going to have a very tough time getting into the wild card spot in the AL.
Why do you think the White Sox are going to be loaded? They're terrible.
No, they got all of those young guys in. I think they're going to be a very good team next year.
I'm not going to make a bet because you know a lot more about baseball than I do, but I think they're a bottom five
team. Your instincts are telling you.
I think they're
going to
be better
else.
Than you think. I think they're going to at least compete for the division.
So, do you think that there is any chance that we end up with Yu Darvish?
I guess there's a chance. I would say we're
so
at.
You're telling me there's a chance.
I would say we're at probably 10% chance to sign him. I think it all depends on if he wants to pitch in a system in a team where he's for sure going to be the number one guy, kind of against I think Yu wants to go into a low pressure situation. I don't think pitching for the Dodgers was where he wanted to be ultimately, and from what I've read, he's a bit of a diva, which I don't like. Okay. He's not really a workman like type of guy, but I would love to have him. I just don't know if we have the money to offer him. So that's
10%.
I still think I'm still in on Archer or Alex Cobb from the Rays. I think that's going to be our best chance to get a marquee starter. I just don't know if we're going to give up what we think or what the Rays are asking, but they want like Nick Gordon, who's our top shortstop. And I think Tyler Jay, who's one of our top pitching.
That's probably too much,
but they haven't done anything in the majors. So I would rather take Archer, who's a 28-year-old on an obscenely team-friendly contract. I think if we even signed him for four, or we had him for the remaining 4 years, it would be like something like $50 million, which is incredibly low for a guy his talent. So I've talked way too much baseball.
And I love it. My heart rate you're our so baseball high. Guy.
Well, ESPN did their prediction on where guys were going to end up, and one of their main writers said he believes that Yu Darvish will be with the Minnesota Twins. It's a perfect fit, they believe. Who knows if it happens, but the Twins supposedly are aggressively going after them.
I keep hearing that, and I've also heard people say, like, I forget who was writing it, said that people are skeptical, and he's like, yeah, I asked my sources at the Twins, like, everyone's skeptical, and we don't really believe this. And the front office person said, yeah, no, this is the real deal. This is pretty genuine.
I don't know if you said this. I was looking at something on my phone real fast. Did you mention the Rodney signing?
Oh, no, I didn't yet.
So
I love it.
Francisco Rodney, is that his name? Francisco Rodney? Yep. The guy who always wears the tilted cap, a reliever. He's got to be in his late 30s by this point.
I think he's 40.
Yeah, so he's pretty old. He's been around the block. He once was a great reliever. Last year he was pretty inconsistent, but is a nice experienced arm for that bullpen.
Still throws mid-90s, so I'll take it. And let's just quick dispel the tilted cap. I don't like it, blah, blah, blah.
He wears a tilted cap?
So he wears it like way to the side, like the bill to the side. Okay. It's in honor of his brother who passed away, who used to wear his hat like that. So that's the only reason that he wears it.
It doesn't bother me one bit.
You know how people are.
Who gives a shit? Jesus. Yeah.
And then the last one is just talking about the possibility of a Twins-Pirates trade. Similar guys in the trade, a trade focused around Gerrit Cole. Still a relatively young pitcher, probably not quite an ace, but definitely quality enough to be on any staff in the league. And a trade revolving around him and Nick Gordon. Is Nick Gordon currently the number two prospect for the Twins?
I think so.
Behind last year's first round pick, Thompson?
Royce White.
I thought that was a basketball player.
Royce 5'9", I think it is.
Royce 5'9", yeah. There you go.
No, I think Gordon's involved in a lot of trades because he plays premium position defensively, and he can hit, and he was a former high pick for us as well. So if you're going to get a number one caliber pitcher, you're going to have to give up a number one caliber hitter. And there's just, I don't think there's any way around it unless you're a dumb franchise.
Well, I really think that really good podcasting is reading things off of Twitter. But I do think it works a little bit when it is friend of the pod, Phil Mackey, and his take on this possible trade from a few days back. It said, for Gerrit Cole, who says no between the Twins, Twins and Pirates, Cole trade, Pirates asking for Nick Gordon. He says, for Garrett Cole, who says no? That's an aggressive haul for the Twins to pay for only 2 years of Cole. So he doesn't have a lot of time left, but he does make a great point. He says, if Nick Gordon plus more for Garrett Cole, steam is true. Something to keep in mind, prospects are often overvalued. Example, Twins' top 10 prospect list in 2010 included Ben Revere, Kyle Gibson, Adrian Salcedo, Billy Bullock, Angel Morales, Danny Valencia, and Chris Parmalee. So I think the idea that these prospects are all going to turn into good pro players, you know, it's obviously crazy. We fall in love with these young players. We hope they turn out. We hold on to them too tightly. But at this point, Garrett Cole and Archer are much better players than we know Nick Gordon will ever be.
Well, and that's what I was kind of trying to get at, is if you have a guy that has a great single-A season and everyone's like, oh, my God, he's the best hitter in baseball, fucking trade him.
Yeah,
like, who cares? And I think part of that is our mindset as a small market club, in that we have to hold on to any prospect that has potential, because we are not going to go out and sign the Giancarlo Stantons.
Yeah, we're more protective than we should
be. Zach Greinke's, like any of these top flight free agents, because we're just not going to spend that kind of money. So we've been trained to 100% be extremely protective of anything that has the potential to turn into a Torrey Hunter, a Byron Buxton, Eddie Rosario, etc.
And then speaking of being a small market team, this is also a small market mindset that I think we just have as a fan base. There's been some teams sniffing around for our best player, maybe not our best player, but right at the top, Brian Dozier.
Yeah.
Been our best player over the last few years for sure. Plays a premium position, a great defender, an awesome hitter. For the second year in a row, teams kind of sniffing around, seeing if a trade is possible. I think on bigger teams, they'd be open to a trade that was good for the team. When it comes to the Twin Cities and in Minnesota, we think of trading a good player means that they're giving up and we're building for the future already.
And it's a betrayal to everyone that bought tickets for the last four seasons. And
why should we buy tickets? They're just going to sell our
Dozier's
favorite player.
Family lives here. I heard my cousin met his wife. She's wonderful.
Kids go to school here.
Jesus,
it's,
come on.
Honestly, there's nothing that makes me feel like Minnesotan is like something to be mocked more than the Twins.
Yeah.
For some reason, the Twins make me feel that way. Like,
they just exemplify everything silly, like, about us. Or
yes,
what?
Exactly.
Yeah, but 10 years ago, you went to like 10 years ago to 5 years ago, you wouldn't have said that. They were the most dominant team in Minnesota.
No, definitely. No, I'm not saying anything about how good they are. I'm just saying how people act about the Twins and how we act like we're little tiny team. And by golly, we're gonna go take on the big guys. You know,
we're the bad news bearers. Yeah. We're the Mighty Ducks. We're the 100% Mighty Ducks. That movie came out, and we've literally been exemplifying that in all of our franchises since that movie came out.
Yeah, so it's
took that movie way too seriously.
Yeah, and it's just like you're saying, it's a betrayal to the fans if we ever trade a good player. And how dare they do that? We spend our hard-earned money on those season tickets.
Well, people flipped out about Trevor Plouffe being not re-signed. And it's like, he's a 255 career hitter with marginal power numbers and plays average at third base. I think we can do better.
I think it's fine. We won't miss him.
We'll be fine.
All right, guys, the last thing we need to talk about before we leave there, we're not even going to really talk about the Timberwolves because they're just painful to watch.
At this point, it's not that much fun to watch them. I mean, I was at the game, and it was a good game. We won. We destroyed, you know, Sacramento. They're horrible.
Whose best player got hurt instantly, too?
Yeah, I mean, okay, so there's not that much fun to talk about.
Well, you made the broadcast. That was kind of a big deal.
Only to your eagle eyes. You're like, pause. You're like, dude, because I sent him a picture, and he, like, used some fucking CSI shit. Like, angled it down. I was like, dude, that's you.
I tracked him down during the Jeff Teague half-court make.
Yep.
Was it half court? It was just inside half court.
And I did happen to be standing
up
with my arms up.
Arms up, picked him out of the crowd. And only because you sent me that picture, there's a dude wearing a red jacket that you couldn't miss from your section, like diagonal in front
of
you.
I'm telling you, dude, don't undersell yourself.
So now the Nordys podcast has been on TV.
Yes.
We've been on TV.
Been on the radio. Yeah, we're huge.
Kind of a big deal now.
So my question isn't really about the Timberwolves, but I want to discuss max contract player Andrew Wiggins.
Oh, God.
And where you guys are on.
So you want to get depressing, huh?
Yeah. So here's the thing. Wiggins, in the last two games, has played almost 80 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Two boards.
Two rebounds and one assist. which is just brutal.
Abysmal.
Stats.
Yeah, that means he's standing around.
He doesn't care. He doesn't play defense. He doesn't rebound. He doesn't pass. He's a ball stopper. He destroys what we're trying to do when we move around on offense. And I mean, I think we're already kind of behind in the offensive thing, but he is not helping.
Well, I mean, yeah, we're a little crazy on offense, and we're horrible in the clutch time, and we've been really bad in fourth quarter, but overall, we're like ranked fifth in offense. Our offense is not a problem.
Our team, but
Wiggins isn't helping that,
yes. We're top half of the league in plus-minus for the first quarter. We're top five in the league in the second and third quarter for plus-minus, and we are 30th out of 30 in the NBA in the fourth quarter.
I wonder why that is. Maybe it's because all the players are tired as hell. It's crazy. I got some major problems with this team with Tibbs.
You cannot play seven deep.
Everybody calling for, you know, like you look at the social media around the Timberwolves, and it's all calling for coach to be fired. I'm not there yet, but if things go how they're looking to go, we're not going to be able to make a run in the playoffs. We're going to be completely exhausted. So I don't know. It's too depressing to talk about. Look, and I don't know why we're so depressed. I mean, we are, you know, still fourth. We're looking to make the playoffs for the first time in 15 years. It's all good. It's not that much fun to watch. The product is weird.
They're unbearable to watch. Yeah. Even the games that we win, other than the Sacramento game, where they actually handled things and took care of business, like the Vikings did against the Bengals.
Right.
That was sort of what the Wolves did against them on Thursday. Just look very pedestrian a lot of times, especially when it matters. And what was the stat from last night against the Suns, Eric? The Suns were 0-for-7
in the
final
5 minutes.
5 minutes of the game, and we lost.
And they still won.
Teague fouled a three-point shooter, and he made all three free throws. They made all their points on free throws, and we couldn't make shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy, and I think that's we're just too tired to defend, and we're too tired to put up good shots, and we brick them. So,
well, but
yeah,
Jimmy Butler
major problems.
Jimmy made a good point, and he said, I don't get where this no energy is coming from defensively, because as soon as we get the ball, everyone's got all kinds of energy.
Yeah,
right. And they're all sprinting down the court because they want to dunk. Like I think he sees it in that it's a mental toughness, mental attitude. Now, I will grant you, playing 40 minutes like in an overtime game, you're probably a little fatigued. I'm not making excuses that's like an illegitimate excuse. But, man, when your team captain, your team leader is saying, oh, you guys are acting all tired on the defensive end, and then all of a sudden we get the ball and you're sprinting out like Michael Johnson in the 200 meter, there's a problem.
That's
there.
Weird. Something's
there's
weird.
A problem there.
Yeah, but Wiggins, I'd trade him. I would fucking trade him.
I don't think his value is very high right now, considering he just signed that max deal. And currently, here's where he's at with PER. I know I always go to the advanced stats, and it doesn't always tell the greatest of stories. It is far from perfect. But here are the guys directly ahead of him. Thomas Saturnansky.
Who?
CJ Miles, Jeremy Grant, Robert Covington, Michael Beasley, Damari Carroll, JJ Redick, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, Jonathan Simmons, and Joe Ingles.
These are nobody's, man.
I don't know six of those people.
These aren't max players. These are guys you pay like $7 million a year. I mean, it's crazy.
And I mean, even to get to a guy like an actual star player, I'm not considering Harrison Barnes a star player, but
you shouldn't.
He's 11 spots ahead of him. Paul George is 14th. Our guy Andrew Wiggins is 30th. Paul George is having a bad year, and
like
he's
really bad.
He's 16 spots ahead of Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah.
I mean, other guys like Omari Caspery and Evan Fournier and Thabo Sefolosha, Tobias Harris, TJ Warren, all these guys ahead of our guy Andrew Wiggins, who just got a max deal in the summer.
And all of those guys and their agents are looking at that and their owner is saying, Wiggins is a max guy and our guy's 20 spots ahead of him in the PER list. Where's our money?
And they're like, no, you're properly paid.
Yeah.
Andrew Wiggins is way overpaid.
Well, remember
the
whole thing with Glenn Taylor saying, I want to meet with Andrew and look him in the
looking
eye.
Looking back at that, it's so stupid. Like,
no, but
because your owner like asks you to be better, you're going to be better. I mean,
no, but I think maybe Glenn Taylor and Tom Thibodeau had seen something lacking and they knew it was a little bit more glaring and they're saying, in order for us to give this to you, we need promises and assurances that you're going to really step it up. And he hasn't.
He has a little bit. He has overall, I think he's better on defense than he was last year. He's blocking some shots. Apparently, he's not rebounding much.
That's part of it. But, just the effort for the little things, he's just not doing.
I don't know if it takes and it's funny, like, we'll have, like, a big night. We've been playing a lot of nobody teams, and we're going to continue that for, like, the next 3 weeks. And then the schedule gets really tough. And I bet he'll fucking throw up 45 points in some, like, you know, primetime game against the Lakers or something when he's... I think he's, like, into the flash and the lights, and then he wants a big audience. Because then he, like, he'll go to the Garden, play the Celtics, and fucking just dominate. But he's very uninspired day in and day out. And you can tell. And you can look at his stat line. The eye test looks like he's fucking standing around, not doing anything. That's what he's doing.
You know what annoys me the most? And this is so dumb. But this is one of those fan things that you notice. Where, like, someone will give him an awesome pass. Like, through the legs, like one-handed bounce pass from the three-point line that feeds him right for a perfect dunk. He doesn't even turn around and point at Teague. You know, a lot of players will turn around and give you the, like, dude, nice pass kind of deal. He'll just dunk it. He
just trots back, straight face.
Doesn't care.
He's a strange personality.
And I don't,
I know they're laid back up in Canada, but good Lord.
I don't need you to be rah-rah guy, pumping your arms and flailing about and, you know, getting, you know, taunting technicals and that kind of thing. But, man, acknowledge your teammates when they give you a good pass. Like, yeah. That just seems a little strange to me. But
that pass probably wouldn't have come from Teague, though, let's be honest.
It must have been Tyus. I blacked out.
Dude, and what the hell, dude? Tyus started out he started the game, right? This last one against the Suns? For some reason, he started, I think.
Did he? I didn't
catch it. Well, he played 9 minutes. He got like 9 points, 7 assists, 7 steals. He was playing out of his mind, and that's it. He's pulled from the game. He doesn't get another minute. We drive our starters into the ground while Tyus and Shabazz, etc., sit on the bench. It's so strange.
Well, who's the one guy that got in for like 3 minutes?
We get
Johnson,
some,
Wright, or whatever
his name. We get some dude in there. He's playing okay, but dude, it's okay. I'd rather see some. The bench team come out, get some extended minutes, and maybe they lose. You know, our lead goes from 10 to 5 during that time. Whatever. Once the starters get back in there, man, they're going to be more fresh.
Yeah.
They'll make that back up.
Again, with the PER thing, I know not perfect, but right now our guy, Andrew Wiggins, is tied with El-Fariq El-Aminu at 227th in the NBA.
That is
so rough.
Disastrous. That is disastrous for a max player.
Yeah.
It's that's disastrous. Like
if LeBron James
that could
was,
really, really hurt us, man. This
if
could
LeBron
be tough.
James was in the 50th position for PER, people would be calling for his head.
Well, speaking of 50th position, that's where our guy Jimmy Butler is. He's in 50th. Now, don't get me wrong. There are guys ahead of him who are terrible players. For instance, the system does mess up when you play really well and you only play 2 minutes all year or whatever. So this one guy, actually, he's averaging 2 minutes a game. His name is Jonathan Motley, and he currently has a PER of 96.14, which is...
they don't have a minimum on there?
Should have given that guy a max,
I don't know.
Man.
Minimum must be... It must be a 100, but... Or is the highest you can go, and he's at 96.14. So literally, he's never played. He probably hit a couple shots. He's probably shooting like 100% on the season.
So we'll sign him for 15 mil a season in the offseason?
Yeah. So, but I mean, so for every guy like that, though, I mean, the guys who do play a lot of minutes, you know, your top guys here, your top five guys who have actually played big minutes on the year, LeBron James, Giannis, James Harden, Anthony Davis, Steph Curry, Chris Paul.
Yeah.
I mean, those are the top guys in the league. And the cream rises. Our guy, Karl-Anthony Towns, is currently at 27th. He's in good company there, ahead of guys like Victor Oladipo, who's been just a revelation, ahead of DeMar DeRozan, ahead of DeMarcus Cousins, directly behind Damon Lillard and Joel Embiid and Kristaps Porzingis. So
I think that's properly where he should be.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's why I say PR isn't perfect. It's not the greatest advanced stat.
But it's a good barometer.
It is a good barometer of just kind of like the quality of play you have been giving us, how good the team does when you are on the floor, how good the team does when you do what you're supposed to out there. And our guy Andrew Wiggins is not holding up his end of the bargain.
Yeah, so, it could be a huge problem. I mean, I think that for this system, this plan to come to fruition, we need him to be better. I mean, we can't just like have him suck and not play very much.
He
you know,
needs to
we
be
paid
a,
him too much.
He
We've
needs
given
to be
him
a
too
top
much
25
our,
player
our,
in the league.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Yep. At minimum.
And he has been. He's played like that for stretches in the past. I mean, I get not on both ends necessarily, but man, he's been better than he is now. So he's got some shit to figure out. The team in general has some stuff to work through. And I haven't seen it happening yet.
Yeah. So let's just reiterate Vikings. More Vikings. Packers aren't going to make the playoffs. Vikings are NFC North champions. And we are traveling to Green Bay next Saturday night to hopefully rub it in their face just a little bit more.
Damn, yeah, Saturday night, that's going to be awesome.
That's a lot of fun. So
at least it's not Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you guys so much for listening. We will be back with you guys later this week with our screencast, and we'll give you a spoiler-free Star Wars review. We'll review the final episode of Mr. Robot, and look forward to next week when we hop into our Best of 2017 episode. Will be a great one. If you have some questions or ideas for what you want us to cover, let us know. But otherwise, we will be giving you what were the best things that happened in 2017. Thanks for listening to the Northeast Podcast, and happy holidays.